Rock Salt Newscast Experience with Aaron, Dave, Patrick, and Jermaine on a mission from God.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Me and the Lord, we got an understanding.
We're on a mission from God.
Yeah, man, on a mission from God. It's Aaron, Dave, no Patrick, no Jermaine, but Leviticus is here from the Pacific Northwest.
What's going on, guys? Thank you for having me aboard.
Oh, yes.
My brother back here again. We're bad at names. I'll remind you.
Kevin. Levi and Kevin.
This? How about this? He's got some heavy guitar riffs. He's a guitar player. He goes by Heavy Kevy.
Heavy Kevy. See, now that I'll remember.
Heavy Kevy.
Because he got Levi, which you could say is Levy. Kevy. See how I tie this all together in my brain?
Yeah.
It's the long way around, Aaron.
I see.
Hey, just by chance, I saw this article this week about the Blues Brothers. I don't know if you guys can hear what we're doing on this side. We got a little Blues Brothers things going here. But it was an article about the Blues Brothers movie. And, you know, looking back 40, 50 years on a movie, well, you know, the person who's writing the article was probably born in the 90s. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
If you catch my drift with this. So anyways, but it was, what was the real mission from God that they were on in the movie? And it's very interesting. Mysterious place.
Yep.
Track of the band, Sal. Anyhow. So in the movie, the mission from God is they've got to get this $5,000 for the church. Otherwise, the city or whatever is going to, you know, take it for taxes.
Okay.
Which doesn't surprise me too much in today's New York, right? So, but they said the actual mission from God in the movie was to resurrect the careers of people like James Brown, Aretha Franklin, Ray Charles, all these greats that were in the disco era. People didn't know who they were. And it did just that. It resurrected all these careers. And I thought that was kind of a cool story. It did go on to talk about how it was racist that these two white guys were taking over black music and it was cultural appropriation. And that was a big deal in the 70s. And I'm here to tell you, it wasn't.
Yeah.
I don't know that anybody would have even known what you were talking about if you said cultural appropriation in the 70s. Anyhow. So we're joined today by Leviticus. It's Levi and Kevin. I did it.
No, yes. Yeah. What is it? Big? I forgot his nickname.
What? Heavy Kevy.
Heavy Kevy. Heavy
Kevy.
See?
Does he get a guitar solo during the show? Well, does he get a guitar solo?
I got three of them back here on acoustic. I'm sure he can knock something out.
All right. No. I, when you guys do a show, does he get a, you know, does everybody leave the stage and he gets a, you know, five minute guitar solo?
The spotlight for 5 minutes, Kevin? Yeah. That's what we're asking.
I think about 30 seconds.
Yeah. Kevin's looking at starting a solo band. Hey, let's geek out for a second, guys. Kevin, what kind of gear are you running? What are you playing?
I'm running one of the new 5150 Iconics.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, it's got just a different vibe to it than the original, and I kind of dig it for new metal.
Yeah.
We play in a lot of tunings all over the place, and I just keep my guitar and drop C and use a drop pedal to go down to A for some of the heavier songs like Resurrection and things like that. Out of the 5150 Iconic matched cabinet, something I can beat up on the road and not feel too bad about that I spent all this money on, you know?
Well, Eddie put together a nice system, didn't he? I mean, I know that it's gone way past Eddie, but I mean, even to start out with, I mean, that was quality stuff. That was good stuff.
All these bands in, you know, the world today are like, I have all these amps. You know, like August Burns Red, all of them. And they always come back to recording with the 5150.
Yeah. Yeah. How about you, Levi?
As far as equipment that we're running for our live events.
Mm-hmm.
So we're using kind of a dinosaur for a digital mixer. We're using a digital mixer with a tablet that slides into it, a DL. I think it's a 1608. And we have two mic splitters we're running. So we run all of our instruments, vocals, and we have backing tracks that we use as well, with some 808s and some synths and some pianos and stuff, some atmospheric pads and some sounds we like adding to the mix. We have it go all into the microphone splitters, and then we just have half of it going into our inner. So we all have an inner monitoring system. So we have that. And then the others is split just to a snake to the front of house. So that way on our digital mixer, we all have our phones so we can run our own mix in our ears separately. And then we just feed our raw signal to the front of house to let them, you know, mix it. Or we could do it ourselves on our mixer, but that's like one out of every 10 events. Other than that, just some typical wireless mics. And we run a DAW called Studio 16 Professional to run some of our backing tracks. And looking to get one of them rolling beat pads back. We have one for a little bit just to activate some of the show mixes and add some more, you know, some effects to the drum set.
And a little, a little bad to the bone.
Oh yeah. There's a promoter right here. That's one to team up with bringing Trap to town.
Oh, nice.
Oh, yeah, nice.
Well, hopefully you get to do something with Trap.
Tony, let me call you back in a second. I'm doing an interview right now.
I was gonna say you can bring him on. We'll do this deal. We'll help you with the deal. We'll seal it up for you, bro.
We'll get the deal on the like this.
I have to go to his house in an hour because he's gonna do a Zoom meeting with me with the venue of bringing Trap to town, and he needs me to go to his house to set his phone up for Zoom. And I'll be sitting across from him on my couch while we do a Zoom meeting with the venue owner to talk about this show.
All right. So we got a limited amount of time, Aaron.
Yeah. He can wait.
I tell you what, we brought in Brian from Dead Sin, which has a fabulous beard, last week. And now we got Levi from Leviticus, who's got the best mustache we've ever had on the show.
Dude, I'm applying to be, there's a 104.1 KXLBD is a country radio station in town. They just hosted a Yakima's Best Mustache competition, and I just entered. And my wife says I'm being too cocky with this, but because I told her the trophy already has my name engraved on it. What's the difference between confidence and cocky? And she's like, well, confidence is more of, hey, I'm applying for this. I really think I'm going to win it. And then she's like, cocky is when you're like, well, I'm already dusting off a spot on my shelf right now to where that trophy is going to go. So I don't know.
I was going to ask you, do you just have cases and cases of mustache wax stocked in the garage?
I have a pretty cool, I could probably even grab it. It's right here. I have a pretty cool leather pouch and it got a big skull on it with the handlebar mustache. Cause it's a brand called Death Grip Wax and they sponsored me. They gave me it's got all different style of holds and mustache waxes. Oils to remove the wax out of your deal, some shave soap. They gave me a whole package deal. It's probably 200 some buck a bag, and they sponsored me with that. So that's pretty cool. So I got a nice
collection. Kevin in the back is going, are we talking about the mustache again?
Yeah, well,
Can we not talk about the mustache anymore?
I'm interested.
I've heard enough about the mustache.
I'm interested in this because is there a whole genre of mustache beard competitions and you get sponsored like athletes and stuff? Does that happen?
So what's funny is there is, but I'm not really tied into none of that. I just stumbled across their page. They saw, I guess, my mustache on the page, like, hey, dude, blah, blah, blah. And I think I just wanted to try something. I bought something small from them. And they surprised me. I bought something maybe like $12 and they surprised me with the $200 package and wrote me a hand note. Say, hey, we see what you're doing. We like your music, blah, blah, blah. Just give us a shout out if you want to on social media, and just gave me their big thing. So they follow me, like a lot of my stuff, share some of their stuff on their page. They're pretty cool. They're called.
That's awesome.
They consider themselves like a brotherhood. It's called Death Grip Brotherhood, but you can search them up. It's called Death Grip Wax. They're out of Colorado. And just super cool. The main guy that owns it, his name's Levi too, and they just won the world's Guinness World Records of the longest mustache line. They have all these guys line up, and they pull their mustache out, and where all these it sounds weird, but all these mustaches have to like touch each other's mustache, and how long of like a quarter mile long.
Do you guys like tie them together and stuff?
No, I think they just pull it out, and it has to make contact. And it was the longest.
It's like. It's like Hands Across America, Aaron.
Yeah.
Yeah. Stashes across Denver.
That's pretty cool. So this is the first competition. People tell me to do it all the time. I'm like, no, it's just a classic handlebar mustache I have. Everyone's their competition. It's all, they take their beard and do it. It's all this crazy stuff. I was like, the only category I would go into is just, it's called like the classic. I think it's just a classic handlebar where it's just how, you know, well you can, just rock, just a classic, simple handlebar mustache.
Do you ever just come on stage dressed as a hipster with your mustache and like totally throw everybody? Like, we didn't come to see this show.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I've switched it up, dude. So I'm actually a country boy out here, too. So I, with some of my rap stuff, and I don't know if I did a few rock songs with it, too, but it's mainly rap stuff just a few years ago. Like, I don't know if you know Mike Jones, a throwback, you know, rap artist, or like Paul Wall and stuff like that from the 2000s.
I recognize the name Paul Wall. I don't know the other guy.
And so just some big more than one hit wonders, but Mount Basie 2000s rap era, you know. So me co-headlining for them, like I'll show up. I showed up out like to a rap concert co-headlining for this event. And I'll show up in a cowboy hat, Wrangler button up, and cowboy boots, and shred it and rap.
That's
and
just awesome.
And people are like, dude, we did not expect that at all. And so I kind of like doing that, just being the goofball. And especially when, you know, your anointing and talent can back it up and just be a goofball, but just shred it on the stage, you know, and just have fun and leave it all on the stage. And it just leaves an impact. Like, wow, this, you know, dorky, goofy guy that's like a mix of Limp Bizkit and Weird Al just shredded the stage. And, you know, and once somebody said that to me, it was funny. It sucked. You're like, you're a mix of Limp Bizkit and a Christian version of Weird Al. I'm like, that could be a diss, but at the same time, those are really successful, you know.
It's, that reminds too, me so. Of that. That reminds me of that joke from Bobcat Goldthwait, where he says, you know, somebody came up to him in the airport and says, I don't mean to be rude, but you look like that guy, Bobcat Goldthwait. He tells the joke way better than you, obviously. Thanks for agreeing with that, Aaron.
Hey, I hear it all, especially with as we're like promoting our shows in like Seattle and some, especially like a lot of these like liberal kind of parts of town, the people just these big keyboard warriors, and especially when you see a Christian band, like, oh, look at Ned Flanders from the Simpson group, and that blah blah blah. And, you know, they say these things that are just funny. It doesn't even tick me off, you know. It's just like, oh, that was pretty clever, man.
I thought, well, you know, that's kind of interesting that you brought that up, because I was going to tell you the story, and then, you know, I like to trigger woke people. I think it's funny. And yeah. I don't like go out seeking it or anything, but I'll do something like Aaron got me tickets to go see NF with him. And I was like, oh, I'm dressing like a total redneck for the show. And Aaron can attest. I wore this vest and a cowboy hat. And I looked like a total, and being in, you know, Northern California, everybody, that is the uniform of the, you know, racist, whatever, you know what I mean?
Oh yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
So, I know I was being judged. And do you know who David Garibaldi is? Have you ever heard of him?
No.
He's a painter. Yeah. He's a painter, and he paints to music, and he puts on a show. So anyways, he was in the crowd. I'm a big fan of his. He's from Sacramento. He was in the crowd. So I ran down and saw him, and I was like, hey, I saw you. I had to come say hello. He goes, yeah, I saw you up there. I'm like, yeah, I'm sure a lot of people saw me up there. You could tell he was a little like, I don't know what to make of you, brother. I want to be nice to you, but you look a little. But I love triggering people like that, and I guess it would be easy to do in the Pacific Northwest.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, for sure. Especially Seattle area and even Oregon, a lot of places in Oregon.
Yeah.
And and it's just getting worse too. I mean, that's a whole nother conversation. We probably won't have it. You already know it's just getting out of hand.
You know what? You know, come on the other show where I'm trying to direct all the politics. Come on the other show.
Yeah.
And we'll talk politics. I trying to focus on music here, and it's really difficult for me, as you see.
Yeah. Yeah. It's part of music too. Realistically, it just is, you know, when it comes to booking shows, where your demographic and where you book venues, and you have to take that in consideration. It's just like us trying to bring Trap to town. I have to be careful where I bring him, because he's technically in this canceled.
Oh yeah.
Right now people are canceling him, and you got this cancel culture, and you have to be, if you know, me being responsible for XYZ of things on the line, bringing him, I have to be selective of where I host the shows and what demographic and you know, where I'm bringing them, you know.
Right.
So it's just part of music too, but without it making that the foundation of the conversation, I get it.
Yeah, it's just, it's so disconnected. And Trapped is a great band. I mean, Headstrong is the song. That's their big hit, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, Headstrong. I remember when they went through that whole cancel thing, and it was just so stupid. It was like, oh, you like that guy? I can't like you anymore. And it's like, this is so sixth grade.
Oh yeah. Yep.
So sixth grade. I can't like you because you like him. And it's like, just grow up.
Yeah.
Grow up. You know,
I lowered my standards on it seems like a lot of these people all around us. So now it doesn't tick me off as much. I'm like, yeah, it doesn't surprise me. Hey, let's keep moving forward, you know.
No surprise. I tell everybody this. If I encounter some kind of drama or something like this, something like we're speaking about, you can feel free to use this because it works great. This. Just, oh, you can't see my hand. Just go away.
Oh, yeah.
Just go away. It says everything you needed to say. I don't care about what you have to say. You're crazy. I don't want to deal with you. I don't have time for you.
Yeah.
It says all of those things, but it also disconnects the cancel culture. They don't have any teeth to bite on. They don't have anything.
Yeah.
Just go away. No, I'm not interested in hearing what you have to say. I don't just go away.
Yeah. And sometimes now you get to a point, like at first you're real careful what everyone thinks about you, and you want to build this good rapport, and you don't want people all saying these negative things. And then I start to pivot to the point, like, man, when these guys are filling up my comments of saying, bashing all these things, it's triggering the algorithm, and it's getting more attention and more attention. It keeps that post coming back in people's feed. I'm like, so it's kind of like that, you know, bad publicity is good publicity, or you know what I mean? It kind of falls in that area where sometimes they just end up helping me in the long run. They're keeping that post of my music video, and it's getting way more thousands of views and blah, 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 because they just keep hating and making up this random stuff, you know? And so I get to a point where I'm like, I learned where it doesn't really bother me. It would at first, that one hater out of the 100 that said good things always stands out like a sore thumb. But now I've realized if you don't have that hater, if you don't have that keyboard warrior coming out on that post, and you didn't try hard enough making something that made an impact, you know what I mean? If there's like nobody hating on it and there wasn't one person that just manifested and lashed out or whatever, then you probably didn't give it your 100% and do what you were supposed to do on this project. If the way I look at it, that helps me out a little bit, if that makes sense.
I think we need to step up our game, Aaron. I haven't seen any hate.
Well, we've tried some. You're like, oh, we're gonna get canceled. I don't want to get canceled.
I mean,
you know,
hey, you know, there was a couple of that for sure had to be like, that is not gonna translate.
yes. Hey, getting back to the country thing, how did Farm We Go come about? Because that is just a fun song.
I love that song, by the way, and I have been playing that for friends of mine, going, you got to check this out. And like friends that are into country music, friends that are into new metal. And I take this as a compliment. It makes me think of the song Rehab, or not Rehab, Country Bartender. That's the song from Rehab, which is a song that, you know, doesn't fit into our scheme of things. But it reminds me of that song because it's got that country rock. It's a sing-along song almost.
And we were supposed to be on a tour with them, April? It was supposed to be, I think it was April. It was next month. We were supposed to be on a tour with them. Or it was March, I forget. With Rehab, Cottonmouth Kings, and Scotty Austin. And I just
that would have been fantastic.
Yeah, and we were basically under the co-headlining list. I mean, there were special guest openers, but we were the transitioner to Scotty Austin and KMK and then Rehab, and also met Danny Boone from Rehab just recently working a show with them, and they're super cool people. But yeah, how that song came about is, so I started getting into country rap, even though I didn't release a lot of it. I was working on a lot of stuff, and I'll try to make this short as possible, but I came to a point of desperation in my music. I was like, okay, I have people liking some of my old stuff. Don't mean I better me this and that, but I was like, there's something inside of me that needs to come out. It's just not coming out, and I'm getting frustrated. My creativity is stuck in a box, and I need to break out of this. What is it? So I was like, I need to do something more of me. And I don't care if it's for the demographic, my listeners, I'm doing it for me. Started making some of the country rap because I'm a country boy. I was learning roping at the time. And so my buddy was like, dude, you should do a roping song. Okay, let's do it. Let's, you know, have my buddy Chase Craig sing the hook. I wrote the hook and kind of told him how I was singing it for him to do it like that. Put it together. And people, you know, a lot of people liked it. Our boss, you know, still jams it to this day. A lot of our coworkers play it. I personally don't really like it, and I know he don't either. But it's one of those things I get tired of, you know, hearing it. I don't know why. It was part of the steps of me letting something out. And then about a year after that, I sat in my room, and dude, I hit a point of desperation. Like, I was like, I'm not gonna go further in my music career till I find out what this is inside me and want to pull out. So I was like, I knew, and I've been trying to do it for years, want to mix rock and rap together. And I knew my vocals weren't that good as a vocalist. I was a better rapper. And so I sat down, I made a goal. I said, I'm going to start this rock song. I'm going to finish it. I'm going to mix it. I'm going to master it. And it's going for the garbage can. I wrote it for the garbage can. And that's how I came up with the song, Something Wrong. Something Wrong was my first song, is where I pivot into the new metal era. And I felt something. It's like, as somebody say, let the beast out or whatever. I felt something kind of be unleashed. It was like, that's what I needed. And then when I was done with it, I wasn't going to release it. I had no expectations. It did dampen my creativity. I did it for myself, nobody else. And I was like, I have to release this. I released it. People are like, dude, this is what we've been waiting for. This is you. This is a part of you that we've been waiting here for a long time, and started picking it up from there. So Something Wrong was my first basically rock song. I made some 10-15 years ago that were pretty corny, but I could just never dial it in. But it was my first professional mix and mastered rock song I came out with. And then it flipped the script. It was just more than a new chapter. It was just a whole different sequel. And now we just mix the rap with the rock together, and people are asking for more country stuff. And so I just want to see how we can blend it all together without sounding too corny. But I also am a country singer as well, and I've done country shows and open up for a country artist. And so it's like, how do I mix this together? And people want you in one lane. What are you? Are you a country singer? Are you a rapper? Are you a rock star? It's like, why can't it be all three? I don't need to be under your guys' label of one or the other. I said, I'm just simply a country boy that knows how to rock out, and I can slay when it comes to rapping bars. So if I can find a way to bring this all together, to come up with a sound, which a lot of it's already been done, but that, you know, that means something to us, then it might mean something to somebody else. Cause there's people out there like us. I listen to country. I listen to rock. I don't really listen to rap anymore. It, you know, just especially now these days, I'm more of a classic kind of music, like classic country, 90s country, you know, stuff like that, and older rap and hip hop. But yeah, that's just kind of how it came about with the country. And we're just diving hard right now in the new metal sound, and I feel like that's where our heart's at. And we're reaching a very dark, kind of like a demographic, a crowd, you know, people. We go in and we got Baphomets everywhere, upside down crosses, 666, and they got their little battle vests on, and everyone's hating Christians in that room. And we go in there and we just bring them the love of God, and we, not sounding prideful, but we just outperform every band on the bill. And it's not like that's our intention, but we stand out upon the rest of them. People are like, whoa, these guys just shred it. And then we also give a message of hope at every secular show we play, or it's Christian, and their hearts get opened up. And we have, not saying our goal is to convert all these people, but yeah, if we can build this, plant a seed of repentance in these guys' hearts and give them a new perspective of the bad definition people give for Christians, you know, and change people's minds, That's kind of where our heart's at. So it's like, and it's been changing people and it's been changing us too. So the dark metal scene we've been tapping into, and we've been able to technically reach souls and really churn people's hearts to the Lord with that. And so that is a big deal for us, because there are some really hard fish to catch. People aren't willing to go in those dark places to go minister, and we are, and we back it up with accountability. We back it up with authority in Christ. We back it up with anointing. We back it up with our God-given talents. We back it up with hours and countless hours of practice and rehearsals. And we just want to do our best not to be glory jackers and give the glory where glory's due and point people to Christ. So that's Leviticus in a nutshell for you.
Well, Something Wrong is your number one on Spotify. So for what you consider a throwaway song, is pretty good.
Yeah, it nothing like, there's some other songs I might like better or might do better performing, but as far as analytically, numbers, that is still outstreaming more than all of our songs still to this day. And so, you know, when it comes back to advertising again, it's like I try other ones, but when I Something Wrong is basically the hook and sinker. It's the hook for our band. I feel like using that song to bring people in, and yeah, it is. And I'm not saying it's a throwaway song technically right now, like it's trash. I had to think that way when writing the song, so I didn't have to like write for somebody else and have expectations and to dampen my creativity. I was like, I'm writing this for the garbage can. I'm just writing it for me. I want to see what I can do, you know. And that I literally was huge for me, because I learned how to tap into this freedom of creativity, because I've been stuck in this box for so long. And I was just getting so frustrated, and I didn't know how to tap out of it to find my own sound. And that really helped me. I stepped out, I feel like, for the first time, and it was just a breath of fresh air. And I was like, okay, this is, I feel like, the route we want to go. We might try different things. We got harder songs, we got slower songs. Shoot, I just did one that's not even rock at all. And even that, I'm just sending it to people to check it out. And they're like, oh my gosh, like this is totally different, but kind of like my old style. And so I'm just all over the place. It's like a big identity crisis. And what matters to me is just write songs that mean something to me, and it might mean something to someone else. So my Spotify catalog is still going to kind of jump around all over the place. It's not going to be all metal.
Well, there's definitely an evolution that you can hear. If you play all your stuff, you know, you can hear where you're going from all this rap, and then you kind of get into a little more rock, and there's some country there, and now you got new metal. It's you can hear the progression.
Yeah, most definitely.
Did you have?
Well, I was gonna say the first song I heard was Resurrection, and
that is a Circle Pit song if I ever heard
that,
one. Man.
That is
just, that opening riff on that thing. I'm thinking of the right one, right? Yeah,
yes.
Okay.
No.
Set free. I'm gonna step on a limb here.
Oh, okay. Oh. Is it Set Free? Okay.
There we go. Yeah, that's right.
Okay.
Well, yeah, either
you
one.
Are, both of them. You are correct, sir.
Resurrection make you want to break faces right off the bat.
Let me.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah.
Set Free and Resurrection are both of a.
Just getting it going.
Yeah.
Do you ever get, I just saw Confessions of a Traitor. They're from England. They're on Face Down, and their lead singer was singing while in like the mosh pit at the show we were doing. Do you ever get down in the prayer pit? We call it the prayer pit around here.
Oh yeah. Prayer pit. Yeah. I almost knocked my tooth out. Someone hit me in the mic, right in the mouth, and you can hear it in the sound system. So we just watched them and networked with them with Confessions of a Traitor, Convictions, Cultist. They we went and drive to Seattle just recently to go network with them and shake hands and stuff, and they're all super cool. Confessions of a Traitor too, they do the lead singer Convictions, pretty cool, kind of hard to crack a shell, you know. Obviously you get some seasoned artists, they're just, you know, they're kind of hard to break conversation with a little bit, and they seem like they kind of care less. But so it was hard with Convictions talking with him for a while, but Confessions of a Traitor, like, those guys are killer, man. The lead singer too would just sit there and talk with you 15-20 minutes, and a big dude, he jumped up on the like, there's a little bar where we were at the Seattle substation, which we just headlined last month.
Okay.
And he jumps up on the bar, and they just had a nice energetic set, and it was just, it was awesome, dude. Confessions of a Traitor, those dudes are cool. And it's one of those things too, not like, you know, I don't know how much the word will go out, and I don't want to like throw them under the bus, but I think it kind of goes back to like the whole like cussing deal, where it's like they're like an awesome Christian group too. And I'm sorry for like throwing them under the bus, and that's not my intention, but it also weird too. And I think about it, because as a band, we tell ourselves, hey, if there's some people in our band that are social drinkers, like that's fine. That's your deal. But as a show, and as we come together with accountability at a show, none of us drink, even before or after, regardless if we don't drink at all, or whether some of the people occasionally think it's okay and drink, that's fine, but we're not mm-hmm. going to drink at a show. But you see them, you know, Confession of a Traitor, you got a bass player, and they're just all, you know, drinking beers after. You're like, see, you know, it's like one of those things where it's like, there was no judgment for me from whatsoever. Don't get me wrong. But it was like, I also had to think about like, what are, you know, you plant this message of seed of hope in your confession of Christ. And it's like, could there be a chance that you could, that seed could be plucked out when after that message they heard, and you're back there drinking Busch Light, you know, out with the crowd, with everybody, not just in the green room to have a little nipper or whatever it is, but like out with everybody, you know what I mean? So it was like,
yeah.
And again,
it may be a little bit different in the UK. How they look at it, you know, because clearly they're from there, you know, they're from the way they talk and everything else. And
yeah. And again, there ain't no judgment. It wasn't thrown on the bus. I think it's one of those things where you talk, bring about like cussing too, where it's like people get so wound up on something and judging, like, and that's where it was hard. Like, part of me was like, man, I want to do this, but I don't want to be under this Christian metal artist like label, because I've been there, and I know what it's like when people hold you to this false account of this expectation, and that it seems like you never live up to it. And I was like, but then I was like, no, I still want to do it anyway, regardless. Yeah, we're a band. Yeah, we're a Christian band. Are we Christian members in the band? Yep. Do we profess, you know, Christ? Yes. And so be it. But at first, you know, I was like, man, what if we just, I don't feel like we have to have a label that says, hey, I'm a Christian, my name's blah, blah, blah. Like, our lyrics should represent that. The way we represent ourselves should say that. And like, we would, you know, and honestly, you label yourself that, people aren't going to, you just automatically get thrown off to the side right away before they even hear you. So sometimes it's like a good fisherman hides a hook. I like to go up into a venue and hey, we're a Christian band, guy, blah, blah, blah. You know, we're just another band on the bill. And we go and we tear it up and we give them a word that God puts on our heart, you know, whatever it is, spontaneously out of the spirit. And boom. Oh, and they can hear in our lyrics and our testimonies that we're a Christian band. And I just like it better that way, but I'm still learning too. You know, I don't know. It's just one of those things. It's just hard. I just be careful sometimes. I'm also selfishly, when I know it's a Christian Kingdom Come festival, it's like, yeah, we're a Christian band that wants to come play, you know, sometimes then I use that title to kind of get our way into, you know, Christian events. But then when we're trying to get in bigger secular events, sometimes it's like, we don't like sugarcoat our testimonies, our songs, you know, the same songs we perform in jails and youth groups, churches, the same ones we're doing in the bars and the taverns or whatever. The message stays the same, but it's kind of the approach sometimes different. It's like, sometimes I may not say we're a Christian metal band. It's like, hey, we're a modern new metal band based out of Yakima, Washington. We're coming, we have a high energy set. We come to bring a, you know, blah, blah, blah. And so it's just one of those deals where it's sadly, it's built such a stigma where it's almost like part of me is like, just wants to refrain from saying like Christian band, even though I'm not ashamed of being a Christian band. It's just sometimes trying to get into the door.
Sometimes it closes more doors than it opens is what you're saying.
Exactly.
And I know where you're coming from on this. This is a topic I keep visiting and revisiting with people. Which, because it just doesn't make any sense to me, that, you know, we have bands like, I'll just choose Ghost, who, you know, the guys claim to be a Satanist. He's all into the occult. He sings about it, and they're huge. But if somebody sings about their faith in Christ, well, they're mocked and made a joke of. And it doesn't make any sense to me, because here's this guy singing about his faith in whatever he's got faith in, and you're praising him. But here's another guy who's singing about his faith No different. It's no different in my eyes.
Well, the Bible talks about how, you know, the world will condemn us, that they'll mock us.
Well, I get
and all that. It's the same thing.
It's the double standard. Well, that doesn't make sense to me.
Yeah, but I, again, as music fans, you know, we just went and saw Extreme and
Living Color.
We went and saw Kid Rock last year. You know, we're music fans. Me and Dave are huge music fans. And some people would not go to a non-Christian concert or go to a bar to see a show. I just want to see a band. Can they play or can't they play? You know?
Yeah.
And I think it's great when bands line themselves up with, you know, we've interviewed some bands from San Antonio and they're always playing different bars there. And all these bands they list on that they're playing with aren't Christian.
Yeah,
and they're one of the only Christian ones.
It just makes me think that there's nothing but bars and churches in San Antonio.
Yes. And so, but I think it's great because they're up there playing. And again, these guys are Christians, born again, and filled with the Spirit. And I know people in the bar are seeing a difference. And they may not, they may mock them at one point, but when they're alone in a room and they're drunk and their life is going nowhere, they're like, man, those guys got something that I don't have. You know, those guys are always smiling. Those guys got something. And the next time they see him at the bar, maybe there's a conversation. Hey guys, you know, what do you have that I don't have? Because there's a difference when you live a life as a Christian on stage, off stage, everywhere, people notice that you have got something different inside you that they don't have. Not that we mock them like, hey, I got Jesus and you don't, but it's like, you can have it too. If you want Jesus, we're here. And we've had different bands on that told us different stories that's happened in bars, how, you know, seeing change lives.
Well,
you know,
it's that's like,
good.
That's good. It's like Disciple. I share that video of Rise from Disciple. It's an old video from one of the Winterfests or whatever it was, but it's such a great video. It shows them live in concert and what it's like to see Disciple live because they're so energetic. They're so entertaining. They're so everything that a rock show should be. And I pass it around to, you know, like in the Aftershock group on Facebook. And I'm like, hey, would you guys ever want to see this band on Aftershock? I mean, I know it's not going to happen, but would they be welcome? And the response was overwhelming. We don't care if they're Christians, as long as they put on a good show. That's all we care about. Good show, good music. That's what we're there for.
Yeah. That's what and, it should be.
Yeah. And so... Yeah, there are the ones that mock. It just doesn't make sense to me. It's kind of stupid in my opinion. But there's also, I don't know, there's a real place for good music right now. Since the onslaught of streaming and the demise of record companies, and I hate record companies to begin with, but I think sometimes they're a necessary evil. But it's become so fractured, I think, that when you do find a really good band, they don't necessarily get the recognition they deserve because they're competing not with, you know, 100 other bands playing on the radio. They're actually competing with 1 million other bands on Spotify.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
And that's where, you're like the diamond in the rough, I guess, you know, you're the one that's hiding in the coal there. It's like, oh, wow. When I heard Leviticus for the first time, I thought you guys were a label producer, you know, the whole thing because you got that sound.
Yeah.
And that's a good thing. I swing the other way too, where I like a raw, I can hear the screw ups in the music, because, and I love that because I know it's live type of, just, you know, that I like that too.
Yeah. Yeah.
But you're very polished. You sound very good and you sound very professional. And
especially your guitarist, he rocks.
Yeah. I don't know. How do I say this? I made this comment to my guitar teacher one time. And as I was saying it, I went, oh, that's so bad. I can't believe I said that. And it's not the way I meant it, but I'm going to say it here. Realize it's not the way it's going to come out, but being so good, why aren't you bigger?
That's funny. I told the same thing to Patrick or 3 days under, and I was like, I don't think he's gonna take this very well. But I kind of said the same thing to him too, like, hey man, I really love your music. I don't know how you guys aren't blowing up more than you are. That, you know, when it comes back to, like you said, competing with everybody on Spotify now, especially right now, you know, being in a band is just a dime a dozen. It's just everywhere. Music is oversaturated with people posting on their Instagram and Facebook. And so now where we're trying to get to is, like, how do you stand out above the crowd? How do you stand out in the midst of the noise, and what sets you apart that makes you different, and not makes you more special than anyone else? It's like, what makes you different? And so you have to do things that are sacrificially, like, harder, or take bigger risk, or be more vulnerable, or do these creative, weird things that stand out above the rest of the local bands. And that's where the true creativity is, because now making good music, like, as you guys, you know, talked about our music being good, that doesn't really get you far. Like, you can have the greatest music in the world and it's locked in your grandma's basement, it doesn't go anywhere, it doesn't get you nowhere, unless you're good at marketing and advertising and promotion and grinding and networking and making connections and being a good steward of your, not just finances, but your connections and all that. It's this big puzzle piece. And so there's just so much more to it than music now. And again, that's just what it comes to, is your social media presence, your building a fan base, and, you know, putting together,
well, it's kind of like
whatever, you know?
Yeah. It's kind of like the 80s with the MTV and all that, where, you know, if you weren't pretty in the 80s, you didn't get your music played. You had to be pretty. I mean, and that goes for guys and girls. You had to be pretty.
Yeah, we would be screwed for sure. Well, I don't know about him, but
I mean, I that's why I worked in radio, because I'm not pretty.
Well, I think though, it's just getting out of performing and getting on tour and playing in front of an audience. I think that helps. I have found different bands because of going to Aftershock, seeing a band that I would never heard of, that they're there, and I go see them for three or four songs. So I'm like, they're really good. And I think you guys are playing a bunch around your area. But I think that's how you increase growth nowadays, is playing live and getting out in the audience.
It's come full circle, really, where you got to get back out and play live. These bands, I keep going back to the 80s, but 80s and the 90s, they were just resting on their albums, because that was the formula. You made an album, you went on tour, you took a couple of years off, you made an album, you went on tour. That was the formula. It worked. And they were able to make that work because, I don't know, Motley Crue sold 10 million albums, and even if they got $1 per album, they made $10 million.
Yeah.
Right?
And you are right. It does come full circle. So at first in the industry, it started coming to, okay, now you don't need to perform and necessarily tour. You can make it happen from home. You build your online digital presence, social media presence. You make all this stuff in the studio, and you just engage online, and that's fine. But now it's starting to come back around again, where everybody is doing that, stuck in their basement with COVID and making music gets oversaturated. Now it comes back to going out and playing the live shows again, and getting and trying to sell some of the physical CDs and merch, even though CDs are out, but people still love buying them. They love stuff that are tangible, you know, to take with them. And so now it is where you're getting, you know, started coming into more digital presence of being a studio queen and only staying in the studio, and that's all you do. But then they realize, and everyone's doing that, and it takes so much to stand out. Where now, just like you said, coming back around, it's going out, playing these shows, and plus it just makes you a better artist. You could be in the studio all the time, but there's something about being on stage and setting up in front of different crowds and playing live that's going to grow you unlike any studio sessions going to ever.
Well, that's like I explained to Aaron, and he finally witnessed it firsthand, which is, you know, doing the podcast is so different than doing live radio. It's not the same thing. It's completely different, because in the live radio thing, there's a certain amount of pressure to, you got 3 minutes to figure out what you're doing next, and three minutes after that to figure out what you're doing next. And, you know, unless you're coming in all structured, which I don't, because I like to paint the picture as I go. There's times I screw up, but there's also times I nail it and it's fantastic. It's the part of playing live. I'm equating playing a live show to being a live DJ, radio DJ. It's sort of similar. I catch where you're going with this. I catch your drift as far as you get the energy off the crowd, and there's just something different about live music as opposed to recorded music, studio music.
Oh, for sure. For sure.
I love a good live album. Yeah. Love a good live album.
Yeah. Yeah. Just like you were saying too, a lot of people like that vulnerability. Like they like hearing when you mess up or choke and run out of air and kind of, you know, struggle here and there or miss a beat on the drums. Like there's real live, you know, music heads that like that and like seeing that, you know, that vulnerability of playing live, and that's just part of it, you know, and that's why we're not hard on ourselves when we mess up. It's like, so be it, dude. We're here to have fun, and people really pick that up, you know?
Right. And you know, the reason I like, you know, hearing a band make a mistake or something, I don't want to, you know, say that's all I want are mistakes, but you know, an occasional mistake or something just tells me, hey, you're actually live. You're not singing to a track. You're not lip syncing. I don't mind a band using tracks to give themselves a fuller sound or something like that, but just to rely on tracks completely bothers me. Because I think that you are not I'm not speaking of you. I actually have somebody else in mind at the moment, but you're not a real live band.
Yeah.
You're a karaoke band. And, you know, if you still put together great music, great. You should probably just do that in the studio. If you can't get out there and play it live, that's okay. I know bands that just do studio work and they don't play live, and they're great too, but don't portray yourself as something you're not, I guess is what I'm getting at.
Yeah, no, for sure. And this topic gets brought up and it's just so popular, and honestly I get tired of looking at all the conversations about the banjos, the show tracks, and I think you just dialed it in. Is that's where it comes down to. If your laptop gets stolen and you can't play a show because you don't have the show tracks, then you're not in a good position to be playing live. Would it suck? Yeah, our laptop gets stolen the day of the show. Yeah, it's gonna suck. We don't have our click anymore in our ears that, you know, a lot of us rely on to be tight on time, and we lose a lot of our sound. But is our show over? No, we know how to play our whole set. And with you know, with that being said,
I feel that we should just release. I mean, if anyone ever asks, just put a show track out. Be like, if you think we rely on a track, this is what it sounds like. And all you're going to hear is boom, you know, boom. And just put a little echo of something. It's just sound effects. And it's just like a tiny bit of makeup for, you know, polishing the sound. And some guys are like, oh, you guys use tracks, you know. And there is some bands that do. They just put everything in it and they're just standing up there acting essentially, but that's not what we do.
Well, I mean, we've seen bands that are, you know, two person bands or three person bands, and you know, they use backing tracks, and I'm okay with that to give yourself that fuller sound, as long as you guys are doing the stuff I'm really hearing up front. You know what I'm saying?
Yep.
I'm okay. I'm cool with that. Whatever you got to do to make that sound, put it in another way. Big Def Leppard fan. Okay. They've got that real unique sound of Joe Elliott's voice on those past albums, right? Went and saw him live. Yeah, and they can't duplicate that live, and it's really disappointing because that's how I remember the song, and I really wanted to hear that voice. And I get it. It's all, you know,
wasn't that in the movie? Stuff.
What's that?
Is the movie called Hysteria? Do you know? Do you ever watch that?
Yeah, I saw that.
They talk about that, and he's like pushing record in the studio, and he's like, all right, now I want you to sing that again in the higher octave. And
right,
like that's how they got that sound. That
well, and see, that's a perfect example, I think, of what I'm trying to throw out there. Is Mutt Lange is an amazing producer, and even in that Hysteria biopic, and I saw a documentary, they were just like, he would go one more time, oh, one more song, oh, let's do this again, oh, let's throw another one on, and Pyromania was no Hysteria. Became this super long album of songs, which was cool if you're a fan, because they had been gone for like 5 years and you didn't know if they were coming back because Rick Allen lost his arm and all that stuff. And they came back with a vengeance. But the problem is they couldn't recreate that live without a track.
Right.
They could only do it in the studio, and that's fine. You made a great piece of art in the studio. I think it's okay to say, yeah, there's just no way to duplicate that live. Queen, during Bohemian Rhapsody, when they would do it live, when the operatic part would come in, they would leave the stage because they couldn't reproduce it live. And that's okay. Leave the stage, you know, because I just think it's better that way. I don't know how we got on this whole subject, but, you know. Anyhow.
However you want to run your band, you run your band.
Yeah.
And if I like it, I'm going to listen to it and I'm going to see you live. You know, there's different bands I know that use tracks.
Yeah.
And that's okay. And there's different bands that are like, no, we're going to do everything live. And that's okay. However you want to run your band,
fine. I think if you have a guitar strapped on, you should be playing the guitar. That's what I should be hearing.
Yeah.
If you've got the mic, I should be hearing you singing, not a track. You know, the bass is there, the drums are there. Those are the ones I want to hear. Now, I'm okay with the track to fill in the keyboard part or whatever. I get it. Totally get it. But you also mentioned all the marketing and everything, which a lot of people don't understand or even think about, that even being in an unsigned band or an independent band is a full-time job with a lot of expenses. Me putting together a podcast, I had a nominal expense up front, but it doesn't cost me anything to do this every week. For you guys to go out and do a show, it costs you right off the top before you make any money. I get that. But people don't realize the full-time job part, which is the promotion and the getting on Facebook and the Instagram and the X and all of those, trying to maintain all of those. For this show, I still ask. I'm like, does anybody have like a 14-year-old daughter that just likes to spend all their time on Facebook? I'll just give them the passwords and they can maintain my page, because I'm 52 years old and I don't want to be on Facebook.
Yeah.
But where I'm going with this is, how you make money in this is the merch.
Yep.
Buying a t-shirt, buying a CD. You get out there, you like the band, you went and talked to them at the table, buy the $10 CD or $20 CD or how much ever it is, you know, that little bit helps a band out so much. Am I right?
Oh yeah.
Have you seen the meme floating around on the internet?
Which one?
Say, Levi. Where bands today are essentially just t-shirt salesmen.
Yeah, kinda.
Yeah.
I mean, and if the money wasn't there, and I'm not saying big money for small bands, but if the money wasn't in merch, Live Nation wouldn't want a percentage of it.
Yeah.
I'll tell you right now, this guy has the passion for it, because very rarely, I mean, I can probably count on both my hands, have we made money? Most of the time it's in the negative, and you know, he takes care of it because he loves it that much and believes in it. And, you know, it's his mission. All those flyers, they all cost money.
Yep.
Anything, And
yeah, it all costs money.
Hardly ever make money. Break even, that's a good day, you know.
Yeah.
Now, as we wrap this up here, I know you guys had some issues a couple weeks ago with your trailer and all those other things, and have you know, how can people support the band, maybe cover some of those costs that you've had to fork out to repair these things?
Well, as far as that go, I think we're pretty blessed. Somebody stepped up and repaired the trailer that we had borrowed.
Or bought the lid, at least.
Bought the lid for it to be repaired.
Okay.
And then his mom, just out of the blue, decided to do a GoFundMe, and we were able to purchase a brand new double the size trailer. Not brand new to us.
Yeah.
But a new double the size trailer that works perfect. I mean, it's more than we could have ever
asked. That's awesome.
And what we raised, like, $1,500 in 3 days or something.
That's awesome.
Yeah. And as far as supporting the band, I believe there's, I don't want to say it wrong, where do they buy shirts and merch?
Our website, Leviticus.com.
Leviticus.com.
Okay.
Yeah. And that's two S's, by the way, right?
Yes. Yeah. And again, if you're listening to the show, we'll post it on the show notes that they can go and buy some shirts, go out and support and see Leviticus live. If you look at their videos online on YouTube, you will not be disappointed, because I'm sure what you see on the videos is exactly what you get.
If you like Rehab, you're going to like Leviticus. If you like the bartender song from Rehab, if you like that, check out Farm We Go, right? And if you like Linkin Park, you're going to like Leviticus. If you like Circle Pits, you're going to like Leviticus. I mean, you cover all these genres, and usually when a band covers a lot of genres, they're not good at any one genre. But you've mastered it, in my opinion.
Appreciate that.
Well, thank you so much.
Yeah, I said awesome. It right. It didn't come off like an insult.
Yeah. You got new music coming up, or...
We're going to work on one right now.
Right now, huh?
Yeah, right after we get off here, we're working on one. And
we have, we got one called a heavy one. One more heavy one coming out called Coming Out Swinging. It's kind of like Resurrection. And then we also got one that's kind of like Something Wrong, where it's a little slower alternative rock metal vibe called Gone. And it's just a little tough, because now we're with our mixing and mastering, it costs about $350 to mix and master these songs at the professional like level we're trying to bring to. And so it's a little tough when, you know, we work full-time jobs. I got a wife that stay at home with the son, just covering all this stuff. And, you know, $300 some to mix a song, you know, is pretty expensive when it comes, when you got, you know, $75 extra for the month, you know what I mean?
Spend
outside of bills. And so it's like, it gets tough. So it's a lot slower now. We have everything we need to hear, mix and master. It's just once I've had a professional do it, it's just hard to go backwards and do it all myself again. So that's kind of hard. Once we kind of already crossed that line, there's just kind of no going back for me. I like keeping it at that level. So
real quick, there was one thing that I wanted to touch on earlier, which was in your music, especially the rap stuff, for a Christian band, you were rapping real talk the way that's the way it spoke to me. And what I'm getting at is, I'll give you an example, like, pick a Skillet song, right? You can understand their underlying tones there. Okay. And that they're trying to, not in a bad way, but they're preaching to you. Okay.
Yeah.
With a lot of your songs, I went, well, this guy's talking about stuff that happens in real life. I mean, that's happening to me today. This dude's talking about it. That's where I think you differentiate yourself from your typical quote unquote Christian band, is it's just real talk. It's real stuff. And not saying that Skillet isn't real. I'm just saying that it talks to a human at their level. I got problems with my job. I got problems with my wife. I got problems with my girlfriend. That's the stuff that Skillet's not hitting on. Do you see where I'm coming at with this?
Does that
make sense?
The storytelling is huge, and when it comes to me, and vulnerability, just of relatability is huge for me when it comes to
he froze. Hope we didn't lose him. He froze big. Okay. Well, he's back. Fantastic.
Yeah, that never happened. My whole house just shut down of power.
Oh, really? Because your picture, your frozen picture is still on my screen.
Yeah. Anyhow. We literally just my whole power in my whole house just had a surge, just stopped for a second, kicked back up.
Oh, wow. So are you on your phone?
Yeah, I just hurried and got on my phone real quick to jump back in.
Well, we were just going to wrap this up here. So they can find you on all the socials at Leviticus with two S's, right?
Yeah. And we talked about the merch before. It was Leviticus.com/store, not merch. So I think we said that wrong earlier.
And you can look for them on Facebook.
Yep, same thing. It should be under Leviticus 2S's or Leviticus Band. We give our music all away for free too, for free MP3 downloads. All they got to do is type in their email to join our mailing list on Leviticus.com. And so if they like me, I got the Android. I'm a big file transfer kind of guy. Like I store a lot of music, like the file itself on my phone. I'm still old school, you know. Kind of, so if people are any like that, like saving songs to their phone or whatever, then we have free MP3 downloads of all of our music available on our website too. So
that's awesome.
Awesome.
So hopefully you'll be coming down here to Northern California and we can see you live. That would be awesome to see you guys perform here.
That would be great. Fantastic. We've been talking about it over and over. My drummer's from there, and he actually has with a band that's down there, a friend of his. He used to be in a band called D1 down there. But we got a whole drum rack that we need to go pick up down there and some gear, and we're just waiting for the right moment to go down there. So we keep talking about it a lot. So if there's anything you guys can do with helping make some connections on a good show, down there just us going to Twin Falls, which is 11 hour drive, you know, cost us probably about $450 in fuel and plus Airbnb. So we take maybe 12 and a half, you know, maybe 13 hour drive to get down there, driving a little bit slower with the truck and trailer. You know, we don't mind, you know, putting in money, you know, to make some stuff happen. But if we can build some kind of connection down there, make it worth our while, you know, for the sacrifice and the weekend, we're, you know, more than willing to travel down there and network, connect, and put on a great show and just meet some awesome cool bands and link up with you guys too. So anything
that would awesome be, yeah, you come to town, definitely swing by. We'll do a show or hang out or whatever happens. You never know.
Thank you very much for your time, for coming on the show, and hopefully we bring some more people to you. You know, doing the show today and all that. Well, that would be great.
Yeah. Well, we thank you too. Appreciate it that, you know, that Patrick, you know, plugged us in and you guys took the time of our day to search up our music and give us the time of day and not just listen to one song, but kind of dig in a little bit and get the catalog and get a feel for kind of where we came from, where it stemmed from. So we just really appreciate that, man. So we thank you for your time too. And even, you know, time of day having us on the show and just word of mouth, spreading the word about us. And we couldn't go places that we want to go without people like you that have interest in live music and support that way and actually spend time out of your weekend to do videos like this. And it means a lot to us too. So thank you, you know, for keeping it real with the, you know, not just the local scene, but, you know, hardworking, independent, you know, artists and musicians and bands. And so it's people like you guys that really like take bands to bigger next levels, just of word of mouth and connections and, you know, just doing what we're doing now pretty much. So.
Awesome. Yeah.
Well, thank you very much. Stay, if you're listening to this, please stay around. We're going to throw two more songs on the podcast, two songs of Leviticus on the podcast. So you can hear their stuff right after the interview is done. So,
all right. And With that, happy trails.
Happy trails, everybody.
Rock Salt Musecast Experience with Aaron, Dave, Patrick, and Jermaine on a mission from God. Wake up!
I'll be Mine. Kill all the demons and demonize me and please command them all to fly. I don't know which way to go, but I think that you will finally let me die. So please let me die. And please let me die.
Rocksaw Musecast Experience with Aaron Tay, Patrick, and Jermaine on a mission from God.
Start open steers, it's time for facing all my fears. Stop wasting years, I don't need to go to town on my way around. I just need a couple cows and when that couple thou. I don't need to smoke the dank or the sticky green to get the cow strength blank with a picking string. I don't even need a phone to get in my zone. I just need to be alone, pray to the throne. Put your phone down. Yeah, I don't wanna roll to the bar we know. So to the farm we go. The smoke, need a little bit of decent until Friday when I roll. I wanna get the buckle, but I know I need the fuel. Climbing up a mountain and I'm climbing like a mule. Trucks running top notch, burning out cops watch. When they pull me over, people stare at what the fox caught. Got a soft spot for all my different animals. I won't run and save the hunting for the mountain wolves. For some on the weekend, it's sipping on mimosa time. For me, it's different, dipping to the Ponderosa Pines. For my buddy's birthday party, I'm supposed to find. Guess I will not make it, cause somebody must have sold the signs. We already made it to the mountains, ain't no turning back. Start picking up sticks, fix a fire, might as well burn this map. I'm wearing a mask just so I can get around. Makes me feel like that, I'll never go to town.
Don't lie.